At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologizes to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? Get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Okay, we'll start tonight with the sad news that Nobby Stiles has passed away at the age of 78. He was a part of the England winning World Cup team in 1966 and a stalwart in the Manchester United team that saw Matt Busby eventually win the Holy Grail and the European Cup. He was kind of the starting point for so many of his team's attacks and also the rock upon which so many of his opponents' teams foundered. I'm delighted to say that we've got John Giles with us to pay tribute to Nobby. John, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Chair.
You knew Nobby really well?
Very well. Very well, Chair. I don't know whether you know it or not. He was actually married to one of my sisters, you know, Chair.
And you've known him since you were such a young man as well, so today must be devastation for your sister and for your family.
It's very, very sad. He hasn't been well for a long time. Jerry got Alzheimer's a few years ago and has been, you know, very, very ill in the last few weeks. So it wasn't unexpected, but at the same time, it's a very, very sad day.
A lot of people, John, won't really be that familiar with. So the name Nobby Stiles is unbelievably famous because yeah. It's such a great name, right? Like, I mean, that's the first part. But we all grew up kind of hearing Nobby Stiles. I kind of, until just reading in the last hour or two about what type of footballer he was, I knew he was hard tackling, but I didn't realise that he was also somebody who had some creative responsibilities. Is that fair?
Well, let's put it this way, Jared. He was a better player on the ball than people sort of gave him credit for. I mean, he was a hard tackler, he was a hard man, he got stuck in, he was very enthusiastic. He had all that. But he could play a lot better than people gave him credit for.
There was a quote from Alex Ferguson, which has bubbled up in the last couple of hours, where he said he talked to Alf Ramsey about the team that won the World Cup in 66, and Ramsey said he'd five world-class players and that Nobby Stiles was one of them. So, obviously, he was rated very highly by the people who knew football really well, who played with him and played against him.
Yeah, well, I played with Nobby myself before I left Manchester United, and obviously a big player with Manchester, a huge player with Manchester, was Bobby Charlton. Bobby loved Nobby. Nobby could do things on the pitch. Actually, that Bobby used to envy. You know, Bobby wasn't a hard nut, and he was one of the best player I ever played with or played against. But he wasn't a hard nut. But Nobby could do things, certainly could do things that Bobby would have loved to been able to do. In other words, tackle, win the ball, get in, be tough, all those things. So he was. Bobby loved him. He loved him as an individual, but he loved him as a player because Bobby knew there was nobody when he was playing with him with England or Manchester United was going to boss that midfield in a way that they get stuck into Bobby and things like that. Nobby could do all of that. But he could also play. Now, he wouldn't be able to beat players like score goals like Bobby Charlton could. But he wouldn't give the ball away either, Jared. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But all the things in the paper was about Nobby being the hard man and tackling and all that. And obviously that's what they concentrated on. That was his reputation. But as you hear people talking, I've heard people on the telly talking today, but Nobby Stiles could actually play. Not like Bobby Charlton. But Bobby couldn't do some of the... Bobby used to envy Nobby for being able to do the things that he did and winning the ball and that. And he loved Nobby. And Nobby was so enthusiastic on the pitch. You know, Bobby was actually a bit scared of him in certain ways. You know what I mean? If Nobby gave the ball away or didn't get into a tackle, Nobby would be the first one onto him. And he'd be the first one onto anybody around the pitch. But he did it himself. And that's what made him such a terrific player, Gerry. His enthusiasm, his will to win, winning the ball. And never, ever did I see him not give it to Bobby when he won it himself. In other words, to show off. That sounds very, very simple, but it's a huge thing in football. In other words, he didn't try to do the things that Bobby could do, and he had the humility to know that. In other words, I win it, I get it, I give it to players who can do better with the ball than I can. But he could certainly deliver that.
Wait, I don't think it's a coincidence then that Bobby Charlton played his best football both for England and for Manchester United when he had Nobby alongside him.
Yeah, well, funny enough, they're the only two players in the history of football in England that have won a World Cup and a European Cup, Ger, the two of them, Bobby and Nobby are the only two. So Nobby obviously was a big player week in and week out for Bobby. And obviously when it came to the major competitions, Bobby could rely on Nobby. But you mentioned Alf Ramsey early on, yeah, because in the 66, you're a bit too young to remember, I think, that Nobby was in the match against France and was, I think, acknowledged that he had a bad tackle on one of the French players, which he could do as well. He could mix it. In those days, you could mix it more than you're allowed to now. And there was a huge outcry in the press and in the media for Nobby Stiles to be dropped from the team. And Ramsey said, in no way is Nobby Stiles going to be dropped from the team. He kept him in. He knew what Nobby could do, and he backed him all the way. And Nobby repaid that in a big way in the part he played in England winning the World Cup in 1966.
I'm just trying to look it up there. That was in the group. They played France in the group.
Yes.
In the semi-finals, they played against Eusebio and Portugal. And
yes.
Again, just doing a bit of reading this afternoon. Apparently, did a man-marking job on Eusebio. England obviously
yes.
go on to play in the final. And at this stage, Eusebio is the best footballer in the world, like European Footballer
oh, yeah.
of the Year. You know, so that must have been an incredible job and an incredibly hard detail for him to get.
Yeah, but he could do that. He could do that. Nobby wasn't big. He was only about the same size as myself. But he was very quick and very well balanced. So if he was marking somebody, he's like, Eusebio was quick. But he couldn't get away from Nobby. You know what I mean? Like if Nobby was, well, you say you're going to mark him, he's one of the worst players you'd want to be marking him because he could read the game well, but he was exceptionally quick, Ger, and could only see the ball. You know what I mean? He was one of those guys, could only see, I know that sounds simple, it's a football expression, but like no matter what trick Eusebio would try, Nobby would watch the ball, and I think Eusebio scored from the penalty that day. But I think Nobby put him, generally speaking, it was regarded as putting him out of the game, which he could well do. I know I played against Nobby a little bit, but he never man-marked me. But I would have dreaded the situation where he was man-marked. He was really good at it and really quick. Players couldn't get away from him, Ger.
So you were obviously mates from the time that you were at Manchester United when you went over as a 15-year-old.
Yeah, I think I was 2 years ahead of Nobby. And he came into the youth, well, the youth team used to be a big deal there. And Nobby was a schoolboy international and a lot of publicity in Manchester before coming to United. So I didn't know him until he came, but we became friends very, very quickly. And I played in Nobby's debut when he made his debut for Manchester United. I think it was at Bolton and we got a draw. Because Nobby was an inside forward in the old days. He dropped back a bit then from the time he came to United as a young lad. But terrific player, a great character, Ger.
Did he take
really,
your,
really good guy. Sorry.
Did he take your place in the team when you left to join Leeds?
No. No. I think he was in the team, but he didn't take my place.
Right.
In the team, actually, he dropped back, back into the back four at that particular stage. Actually, he played in the back four as a little fella, but he ran the game so well alongside Bill Foulkes. But he didn't take my place in the team.
Okay, so you were
at
still
that particular time.
You were still able to be friends then at that stage. There was no rivalry.
Oh no.
And when you
you mean in the team?
Yeah.
Well, there was a period just before I left in 1963. We won the cup, and I think had Nobby been fit, he was injured. I'd fallen out with Matt Busby at that time. He was injured for the cup final team, and he might well have been in the team before me, but not in the position I was playing in. Do you know what I mean, Jeff?
Yeah, okay.
But actually, I was living with Nobby at that time and his mother and father in Manchester. And it could have been a bit tricky, but it never was. There was never any competition between Nobby and myself. I mean, I'd fallen out with Matt Busby, as I was likely to be left out of the team. But it had nothing to do with Nobby. But it so happened, I played outside right in the cup final in 63. Nobby would never have been playing outside right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but he could have been playing inside right with Quicksall moving to outside right.
Right, so
that could have been the situation. So we weren't direct rivals, but that's the way it panned out. But Nobby was actually, but that never came between us at all.
Before I ask you about your friendship, just when you went to Leeds, then like obviously, a lot of the play was going through you and. He is a direct rival on the pitch at that point. Were you nice to each other? Were you able to beat the crap out of each other on the field and then still be friends afterwards? How did that go?
No, we were okay when I went to Leeds. Actually, if he'd have kicked me, my sister Kay would have killed him. so he'd leave me. Now, when I was at Leeds, I actually was playing on the right wing and Nobby was playing really at the back at that time. So we never clashed. We never really clashed in that way.
Okay.
That's at all.
Probably for the best. Talk to me then about your friendship, will you, John? How did you get drawn into each other's company at the start? What was it like? Because you were obviously young men just living the life playing for Manchester United.
Yeah, well, Nobby, I think, was 2 years, coming to United a couple of years behind me. So I might have been a pro when Nobby was on the ground staff. But we got friendly. Nobby was just friendly with everybody. So we got friendly. We got very friendly with each other. And I think Nobby then, when I was then coming back to Dublin during the holidays, Nobby was still on the ground staff. So I invited him over to Dublin to spend his couple of weeks in Dublin with me, and he loved it. He loved Dublin. And then eventually I moved into Nobby's with his parents in Manchester, which were brilliant to me because Diggs wasn't the best place to be at any time. So I lived with Nobby for a couple of years, and he then came back to Dublin, and then he met Kay, which is my sister, and when I was living with him in Manchester, I saw letters coming from Dublin, and I remember saying, where are these letters coming from, Nobby? And it was Kay writing to him. I didn't know he was going out with Kay.
Right.
At that particular time. And I was calling him a sneaky little bugger, you know. But they eventually got actually we got married in the same year, in 63.
Right. And come here. So when you were coming back to Dublin, was that back to Father Matthew Square? Did your family still live where they had done when you were kids?
No. I came originally from Ormond Square.
The keys,
we only moved up to the Navan Road, a house up in Navan Road. I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks before I went to Manchester permanently, Ger.
Okay, so you were coming back over to...
We were coming back to actually, we wouldn't have been able to invite anybody to Ormond Square. There wasn't hardly room enough for ourselves. But we got it. Well, my mother and father got a three-bedroomed house just up off the Navan Road. So that's where Nobby came.
And when you came over for the 2 weeks, you're Manchester United, you're relatively famous. What was that couple of weeks in Dublin like...
Well, there was none of us, neither of us were famous, if you call it famous, at any stage at that time. We were both very young, Jared. I was only 17, Nobby would have only been 15 at that particular time. I hadn't played in the first team, Nobby hadn't, we were nowhere near the first time. Actually, it was just before, it was just around the time of the Munich air disaster.
Right.
Around that particular time, so like around the Munich air, although I was older than Nobby, I was about a million miles away from the reserves, never mind the first team, you know. So Nobby would have been playing in what was in the A team and the B team, and I would have played with Nobby in those particular teams.
And do you remember what those holidays in Dublin were like? Because obviously this is the bit where he's quietly falling in love with your sister. Were you going out to dances? Were you, was there, what was that life?
Yeah, I was going out with Anne at that time, and we're going to dances. And Kay was, Nobby was quite a good dancer. I was hopeless. My wife was a good dancer. Did the old rock and roll. There was the old rock and roll at that time, Jared. This was the late, the 1957, 58, 59 time. So I think they enjoyed the dances more than I did, that's for sure. My two left feet, Jared, hopeless. Hopeless.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it must have been decent. If you were good as a footballer, you should surely be able to stretch stuff.
No, definitely no way in any way, Jer. No. if I'd been in dancing, I would have been playing in the local leagues for me dancing.
Nobby's
hopeless. But Nobby, at that time, was coming over for the 2 weeks. That's all he could get, you see, because he was on the ground staff. But then he signed pro, so he was able to come over for a bit longer at that particular time.
And you didn't know he was romancing your sister at this stage?
No, I didn't know till the letters were coming through the letter and I could see the Irish stamp on it, you know. Well, I don't think he was trying to keep it away. He wasn't trying to keep it secret. I don't know what he was, he was mad about Kay. He was mad about Kay. Kay was the boss. When they were married in that, Jer.
Yeah.
In a nice way. You know, he idolised Kay.
Yeah, well, look, that's great.
Yeah.
Nobby's dancing was so good that it made the song Three Lions, the famous Football's Coming Home. There's a line about that in Nobby's dancing. I didn't realise that until, again, I was just reading today.
Yeah, well, Nobby was really famous for his dance on the field with the World Cup.
Right.
That's where that started. Yeah, you know, he was doing a special dance of his own. He was in a world of his own when they actually won the World Cup. And that I saw the bit of the telly today, and that's the first thing they showed Nobby dancing around the pitch with the World Cup in his hand.
What was your experience of that? So your sister's husband wins the World Cup, and obviously your mates are winning the World Cup. Where were you watching that game?
I was watching. I was in where was I at the time? I would have been in. That was in '60s. I was obviously in Leeds. I would have been watching on the telly in Leeds at that particular time.
And it wouldn't be like today where you'd go down and celebrate with them or any of that kind of stuff. So
No. He'd be meeting with Kay. I think Kay, I think she just had a baby at that particular time. And Kay spent a few days with us when Nobby was up to the World Cup final. She was on her own in Manchester, so she came over and spent a few days with Anna and myself. And then she went down for the World Cup itself. I think it was only for one day. To be at the World Cup and to do afterwards, but because they were away a long time at that time, Jerry. You know, like Nobby wouldn't have been away for. They were doing the friendly matches, the build up to the World Cup. Nobby probably was away for about 4 weeks at that particular time.
Yeah, and was that experience like obviously amazing for them and for the family? Was there a little bit of like, ah, oh, geez, I wouldn't mind a bit of that for myself?
At that stage in '66, Jerry, when I was playing the international team, we didn't even dream about getting to a World Cup. You know, we had the selection committee of five. I won't go into it too deeply, but we were going nowhere, Jerry. We had a selection committee of five that picked the team, and it was one of the worst. I'd say one of the worst run teams in the world. We never even dreamt of getting to a World Cup at that. Well, I used to dream about it, but I had no chance of fulfilling that dream in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, okay. So it was just a brilliant thing that's happening in your extended family.
No, I was delighted for Nobby. And I knew a few of the lads as well. I mean, I played with Big Jack. Norman Hunter was in the panel. So I knew a few of the players that were playing in it. So I would have had a personal interest in it as well.
Yeah.
Norman didn't play, but he was in the squad. Big Jack obviously played. And of course, Nobby. So I people in Ireland might like me saying it, but I was actually cheering for England to go on and win the World Cup because of the people I knew.
I think that's fair enough. To go back to something you mentioned there, obviously the Munich air disaster happened.
Yes.
So I think you're 17 at that stage, are you? It's still like very young.
That was in February 68. 58.
Yeah.
I just signed pro in November of 57. So Nobby would be on the ground staff at that time. Nobby wouldn't be a pro. I wouldn't have signed pro at that particular time. I just signed pro in the November to the February.
And so pretty quickly into playing first team soon after that, or how did that work out?
Not really. Yeah, well, there were so many terrific players at Old Trafford at that time. You know, like before the Munich Air disaster, I think I was playing in the B team, which would have, you have the first team, the second team, the A team and the B team. I would have been way, way down the list of players with the amount of players, young players that they had at that particular time, Chair. But when the Munich Air disaster happened, I was promoted to the second team, which was a big step. And then we had the holidays, and then I was back in the second team immediately after the Munich Air disaster.
Right, and so from there, like another 6 months, and then eventually getting into the first team, and it's a couple of years before Nobby actually makes it back into makes it his debut
first
in the first team.
Yeah. Well, I think I got in the first team probably 12 months after the. I didn't get into the first team in the season after that. It was just the start of the next season, yeah. In 59, I got in the first team. My first match in the first team was in 1959.
Right, and I think Nobby makes his debut the next season in 1960.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that would be about right, yeah.
In retrospect, obviously, we understand the impact that the Munich Air disaster has on the club and on the city of Manchester and on football in many ways. Are you conscious of how big a thing it is at the time, or are you just getting through the everyday, going, there's a game, I've got training, I've got to do my job? Were you aware?
I wasn't aware of it, Jared. Actually, I was at Old Trafford training. Nobby would have been there that day training for the U team. I was in Diggs at that time. And Bill Inglis, the old trainer there, after we were on the Thursday, I think it was, we were training for the U team. And he came in, he said, there's been a crash, the plane has crashed coming back. But it sounded like there wasn't serious. And then I gone back to the Diggs and I found out exactly what it was. And it was a difficult time, Jer, because we weren't allowed back to... Well, we told not to come back to the ground for 2 weeks, but it was all going to funerals, Jer. Local people. Don't forget, there was a lot of people in staff and that, apart from the players that were killed in that particular crash. So we were spending most of the time going to funerals. Over to Dublin, actually, for Bill Whelan's, Liam Whelan's funeral. So that's what we were doing most of the time. It was a difficult time, but you just had to get through it, you know.
Yeah, and then go back to playing football, and in a way, the football like has never been more important, and also at the same time must have felt a little bit unimportant.
Well, you know, I wasn't involved in the first team or second team at that particular time, but it had an importance, of course. Actually, the first team got to the cup final that particular year. So the likes of Bill Foulkes and Harry Gregg played in the first match after Munich after only about two or three weeks. How they did it, I don't know. And then Bobby Charlton came back and Bobby carried them to the cup final that particular year. Bobby was just absolutely unbelievable. And he had an awful lot on his plate, Bobby Charlton. Like, he was one of the few that survived, the senior players survived the Munich Air disaster. And I think he was only 21. And he was absolutely brilliant. He was picked for the England team. So Bobby had an awful lot to do at that particular time. I was only playing in the A team and the reserve team at that time, Chair. I was a million miles away from it.
And by the time you make it to the first team, and by the time even Nobby makes it to the first team, it's far enough away for it not to be something that everybody's talking about all the time. But I'm sure the long shadow must have hung over the club and the team and Matt Busby.
Oh yeah, for a long time, yeah. But it's funny in football, yeah. You know, once you start, and the crowd come back, and you start playing. It's your profession to do it. You just got on with it. But obviously, I mean, the Munich Air disaster still hangs over Manchester United at that. You know, for players at that particular time.
And look, the only interview we ever did with Bobby Charlton, he talked about it and just how difficult it was to ever move on. That, like, the sights you see, and then the
Bobby never wanted to talk about it, Ger.
No, I can understand why.
You know what I mean? You probably spoke to him in a long time after the Munich Gare disaster. But after that, at that particular time, you know, the Harry Gregg was another one, Bill Foulkes. Harry Gregg wouldn't talk about the Munich disaster for at least 10 years. At least it was a dreadful, a horrible time.
And, you know, you're both kids coming through, getting into the first team. It's supposed to be exciting. It's supposed to be the greatest thing that's going to happen in your life. And, you know, I understand that the stuff that you guys went through isn't of the same magnitude as what the people who were actually on the plane and survived. But, you know, it's a very unusual introduction to first team football and to professional life.
Well, I think it was long enough after that, Gerard. You know, like when you're a footballer, well, anybody, like you have to get on with it. I mean, the Munich disaster was in February 58. I got in the first team in, I think it was around September 59. So, like, you just get on with it. I mean, football, once you're out on the pitch, once you're playing, and everybody gets on with their career and gets on with their life, it'll never be forgotten. But at the same time, you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
And as I said, Nobby and myself, like, we were nowhere near the first team, and didn't know the lads who were killed in the Munich Gare. I didn't. I don't think nobody hardly knew them at all, Ger. Hardly knew them at all, because there were so many players at the time in the club that, I mean, I'd signed pro in November, but I was scared still. I'd never spoke to Duncan Edwards or Eddie Coleman was friendly, but you wouldn't be anywhere near those lads.
Yeah.
Nowhere near them. So it wasn't never a personal thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a kind of an institutional thing that, and then that team has the pressure to go on and do more than the Busby Babes did as well. And for Nobby
eventually, Ger, yeah, it took a while. I mean, when I got in the team in 1959, it wasn't a great Manchester United team. Actually, they only started to pick up after I left.
Pure coincidence, John. The experience of Nobby as somebody who was part of that England team in 1966, I know we've spoken before about football not necessarily knowing how to treat properly the legends that actually built the game. And I know this was a difficult thing that his family have had in recent years, that football really needs to do better when it comes to looking after the heroes that made the sport so iconic and important.
And that hasn't been the case, not just with Nobby, but lots of people there. And there's a lot of criticism of that from the football community, let's say, and the Professional Footballers Association in particular.
And, you know, you'd hope that maybe days like today, and maybe today's not the day, but maybe tomorrow and the next day, people begin to start talking about that and the fact that, you know, Nobby's family had to go public about stuff that maybe they didn't want to go public about.
Yes. Well, Nobby sold his medals. And I mean, there's one or two people actually criticised him, a famous cricketer, criticised Nobby for selling his medals. But Nobby had no alternative. Nobby would want to keep his medals. Of course he would. But, you know, the old saying goes, you know, medals don't put the meals on the table. And it was something that Nobby had to do. And did it, of course.
Yeah, and you see what's happening with football at the minute and the massive conversations about the billions and the percentages, and you think,
yes,
it really wouldn't be that hard for football to come together and say, here's a little fund, we're going to make this fund available, and do it quietly.
No, it's not going to happen. Now, I must say now, Nobby and people of my generation don't envy the players that are getting what they're getting today. Yeah, good luck to them. And I'd always say that. Nobby loved playing football for Manchester United. And I love playing football for Leeds and Manchester United in Ireland. So it was never a money issue, you know. Nobby, good luck to the lads who are earning what they're earning today. It's not them. It's the people who are in charge of the situation, yeah, that the old players should be treated better, in my opinion, than they have been.
Yeah,
and Nobby would be one of those players.
It's the administrators and the owners and the union who really should have been pushing this forward, as opposed to.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's happening in the game, the players who are dying off now from my generation, myself and Nobby and that, I'm very lucky. I don't need anything here, but there's a lot of players do. But the players of today, with the money that they make, and good luck to them, won't need to be looked after. They'll be okay financially, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Whereas the players of my time, they're dying off anyway. There won't be that many of them left. And then the players that will take are taken over now will be financially secure. The vast majority of them will, anyway. So I think what needs to be looked at, the likes of Nobby and players like that from that generation, need to be looked after better than most of them have been.
Yeah, no, I think everybody would agree with that. John, last question for you. How are you going to remember Nobby at his happiest?
How would I remember him? Well, on the pitch, definitely 1966. And in the World Cup final, I've never seen Nobby as happy playing football as he was that day. And what I'd remember most with Nobby in very recent times, before he was ill, we had a birthday party in Dublin, and I would certainly remember him for that.
Yeah, look, I know, John, we've been having too many of these phone calls recently as your former teammates have been passing away, and you know, it's a difficult time for everybody, and we send all our condolences to you and to your sister and to your extended family. It is a tough time, but you know, you've got lovely memories there of an incredible life. And
definitely lovely, yeah. Terrific, Jarrett. Yeah, a gentleman, and a beautiful lad.
On that note, John, good night. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks, Jarrett.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.